I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Happy 2018 and welcome back to your one and only Soul Sisters podcast. I'm Jesse Katz.
And I'm Dara Golub.
We have a kick-ass guest to kick off the new year with, Lizzie Plappinger. We have been dying to have her on the show for a long time, actually, and she has a new solo project going on. She's put out a few singles, and she has a new EP coming out at the end of this month, so this seemed like the right time to try to get her again, yeah. And here she was.
Yeah, such a badass. Mm-hmm. First of all, I didn't know what to wear, because she's just the coolest and most colorful and
she's a fashion
creative
icon. And there's many articles written about her by Vogue when you search for her as any music publication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like also like her smile, she just like exudes this like confident, excited, happy, like wonderful energy and like wears the colors and the fun to match it. So,
yes. So there was that.
So there was that. I was very excited.
But she's also a hero of yours, especially
yeah.
for
well,
other reasons.
I mean, we talk a lot about, on this podcast, and we've talked about having guests who are, yes, musicians, but also inspiring in other ways. And I think that Lizzie embodies kind of like what our idea of a soul sister is. She's a self-starter. She's made all of this stuff happen for herself. She's the founder of Neon Gold Records and subsequently a musician in her own right mm-hmm. with a band, Miss Mister, and now with LPX, her solo project. Mm-hmm. And I think we always sort of wonder what is in the modern 2017, 2018, what does it mean to be on a record label? What is a record label? What is an indie artist? All of these questions. And she literally comes at it from both sides.
Right.
So it's
she gives us a 360 view right. of being a badass woman yeah. in music. And she also supports the careers of other amazing women artists that
yeah.
we love. She has Christine and the Queens, Tove Lo,
Charlie XCX.
Right. She was the first label for Haim.
Passion Pit,
yeah.
St. Lucia.
Right.
right. And She exudes an energy of support and like community, as opposed to I think a lot of artists can feel the need to have a competitive, you know, edge and not be necessarily promoting others.
Mm-hmm.
And she's completely, I think it's because of her nature and also because of the work that she does, she's supportive of other artists in a very like giving way.
Yeah.
That's great.
Okay. Well, this is a dope way to start the new year. So let's just get to it. Lizzie Plappinger on Soul Sisters.
We are here, the end of the new year, the beginning of the new year. Fuck, see, that's weird.
The end of the new year.
It always feels natural
Maya,
the first
time,
time
flies.
And then the routine is the worst. You're like, why did this feel so good the first time?
The last time she asked me to begin, I never began, and she asked me to begin, and I like totally just botched the name of the guest. So I'm like, all right, here we go.
Okay. We're using all of this, by the way. Keep going. This is great.
This is my dream. To be here with you at the end of the year and starting a fresh year with Lizzie. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. I'm so stoked.
Perfect.
Enormously warm reception. I'm loving it. Have me as often as you'd like. I'm yours.
Great. Monthly?
Monthly.
Residency yeah. here on Soul
Sisters? Residency on Soul Sisters.
Perfect.
Consider me
amazing.
A Soul Sister for life.
Great.
Even though you're already doing now your own hosting and like show that hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, but the
you're
more
doing so
don't
more
tell
the
her
merrier,
she's too busy
you know?
For us.
Okay.
Let her decide.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got all the time in the world, my soul sisters. You know.
Okay. Yes, I think that for many, many reasons, you're like the perfect sort of epitome of a soul sisters guest. You know, part of that is because of the diverse things that you do, and part of it is just your amazing energy. But I think that like we talk a lot.
You can't see me, but I'm blushing.
You can see.
You guys can see.
We talk a lot.
Oh, it looks at the camera. It happens.
Yeah. We've been talking for about 20 minutes here. We talk a lot about industry stuff, but always from a musician perspective. We have not really had the opportunity to talk to someone not only just who's from an industry perspective, but who has both. So, and it's you. Okay.
Yay.
So
now I can start. Where do you want to start?
Gosh. Well, okay, let's start with this, that I, a little bit of a connection here.
Yeah.
So the first time I heard about Neon Gold is from a friend of mine, Ross, who's in St. Lucia.
Just saw Ross the other night. He was at the LPX show.
Amazing.
He is an Iowa boy. My mom loves him because we throw this festival, Neon Gold called Stars and Stripes, every summer to raise money for the local YMCA. And St. Lucia came and played like 2-3 years ago. And the band stayed at my house. And my mom fell in love with Ross, as one does. Because he's like a good Iowa boy.
He is
so
a
she
good Midwestern
Opie
boy.
The whole time.
That's funny.
And it's like, you know, your parents
feel
like certain attachments
fed.
To people come in and out of your life. Sure. And so my mom will call me like, now and then and be like, how's Opie? And I'm like... You mean Ross, and I love Ross, but Ross is like, you know, like one of many characters in,
sure.
my scope of life,
yeah.
But he is like a permanent force in my mother's mind.
It's funny how your parents hone in on certain people like that.
Yeah. Once they make those connections, because once you graduate, your parents don't
know your friends.
No, not the way they like in high school, so it's different the way they attach to people once you're
right.
older.
And
yeah. I'm constantly painfully saying to my mom, I haven't talked to her since high school.
Yeah.
Will you stop asking me? I feel like a shitty friend. You keep asking. I don't know. You follow her on Facebook, too, so you know about her.
You
friends.
Have answers.
I have no more information for
you. Right, you're like, I have many new friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So you know Ross.
So I know Ross, and I remember the first time hearing about Neon Gold was in, like, I think 2011. So I'm making a documentary, and I'm sort of really interested in the process of moving forward mm-hmm. and next steps, and being on a record label is/was, and I'm curious your thoughts on that, you know, the step
ultimate.
That means yeah. you are making it.
Yeah.
And so I remember hearing about Neon Gold and be like, oh my God, your band is on a record label. That is everything. That's amazing. Not knowing how just like cool and hip and amazing and like, you know, trend setting and everything that it would become or
Your band trying to get with Neon Gold?
What was your band? Oh my God.
So I know Ross from the New School where I met my bandmates and we were in Parlor Tricks.
Yeah, I've heard of your band.
Okay.
Sick.
Yeah. Yeah. So were we trying to get onto Neon Gold? I don't think that was ever like
specifically.
You know, I don't think it works that way really. Although
no?
I don't know why we wouldn't have. You know,
I mean, it doesn't work that way that
happened.
A band will court a specific label.
I feel like it has to go the other way, but you tell me.
I don't know. I think it could go either way.
Has it gone either way with you guys? For Neon Gold,
yeah. Like people have approached us. I'd say in recent years, now that we've sort of solidified the identity and brand of the company, and
yeah.
given just like the nature of relationships that Derek and I have,
uh-huh.
more often than not, bands are brought to us just because we happen to know managers and
right.
labels and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Probably at the beginning, it wasn't quite as much that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. But, I mean, because now the artists that you have are the top artists, and I guess this is another good place to sort of jump into, like, some stuff. It's an indie yeah. label with the hugest acts on it. Are they indie artists? What is indie to you, and has that evolved?
Independent, I think, to me and to Derek has always been, you know, that we are autonomous and not compromising our vision and taste. And so while we've operated as an independent label, we really... you know, like to claim ourselves as an indie label.
Mm-hmm.
And we started as a vinyl record label. You know, we were with Columbia Records as a joint venture for 3 years. And now most recently we've been with Atlantic for 3 years. So while we, you know, are independent and we have control over our own company mm-hmm. and signings, we are lucky that we have had the backing of major labels to pick up and take our artists to the next level. And so I think we've always felt like we're this really great 1-2 punch for an act where you get sort of the hands-on, independent, unique attention of a small label, but
uh-huh.
when you want to really go dynamite, you have the strength and muscle of a major label to take you to the next level.
What does that mean exactly? Like, can you give an example of like what you guys would do and then when the major label would
yeah.
step in?
Yeah, like, for example, I think one of the things that, like, Neon Gold is best at and something that we've really established ourselves as is mm-hmm. is tastemakers
right.
and a really good sort of stepping stone and jumping off point for an artist.
Right.
So when I think about something like Haim.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw Haim at South By, fell in love with them, and then essentially, you know, put out singles and EPs with them and booked their tours for like the first year and traveled
wow.
on the road with them and helped build them, like build notoriety for them, whether it was through this blogosphere, through live, through press, general connections. And then by the time that, you know, the label and they were interested to like go to radio and really have enough money to make a music video, then the major label can get involved and start to pull the trigger.
And is that still how it functions? Is that you're not... Do you not the line to radio and the bigger stuff like that?
We are now, as we've sort of evolved and gotten more comfortable as a company and just honestly gained more knowledge after doing this for what will be 10 years next year.
Wow.
Now, and especially with Atlantic, I think we've become more like hand in hand about developing a project. So most recently we're working with this artist called Matt Mason, who's absolutely incredible. If you haven't heard, please check out his EP, which is out now. A singer-songwriter from Virginia. Amazing. And we've been developing him over the past year and putting him on the road and developing music videos and working to radio and all that sort of stuff. And I'd say that Atlantic has been side by side in that process. And I think that's what's really helpful for Derek, because I think down the line we would really love to be our own company. I think we always look to a label like XL. You know, that's like for us the mark of being a brand that people recognize. When you sign to XL, that means something. And they do it all sort of in-house, but they also have done these partners with major labels to really break things on a Grammy-like scale and world-like domination. And so we look to that model a lot. So to have this firsthand experience with labels greater than ours to learn from, it puts us in a better position, I think, in time to hopefully take on board what we've learned and be fully independent.
Right. Yeah. So you don't hand people off to them. It's always a two-handed...
It's two-handed, and then if it gets to a certain point where it goes like fucking cowabunga, then, you know, there are opportunities for just like pure upstream.
Right.
Okay. But even in those situations, we've still honestly been kept on board as consultants, because at that point we have such close relationships.
You're still the tastemaker.
Still the tastemakers. And I think once you're part of the Neon
Pole family,
the
artist is probably comfortable having you still be involved.
It's really mostly that where we are so close with the artist and we have such a trusting back and forth that stays on forever. So for instance, someone like St. Lucia, someone that we signed for albums at Columbia, we're no longer at Columbia Records. Technically, we're not really a part of that campaign anymore, but
they're your friends. They're our friends.
So I'm still in the studio with Jean, and he'll still play Derek and Me things before he releases and wants our opinion, and we'll always talk about campaign strategy or give our feedback wherever they want it. I think once that relationship is established, that's there forever. And that exists, honestly, even with artists that aren't like officially part of the Neon Gold family.
It's a community. Right.
And part of that has been supporting bands through the blog since the beginning, or supporting bands through Pop Shop, which has been such a huge piece of the Neon Gold conglomerate.
How would you describe Pop Shop?
Pop Shop for us is just I guess it started as an extension of the blog, as a way for us to really, we always talk to bands as like, you know, you're starting band, usually had to play like Mercury Lounge. It was going to be a really cold, sterile industry show. And what we felt so good about with Pop Shop was we're like, we're young kids, we're out of college, we can promise you a good fucking time, an amazing audience. It's going to feel like a party. It isn't going to feel like a weird, uncomfortable industry show.
Yeah.
And so Pop Shop has always had this incredibly just bright, fun party mentality to it. And so it was great to give bands an opportunity, instead of paying to three people, having a bit of a community and brand and following Neon Gold to promise them a packed out show.
Right.
And to build relationships with people. So like putting on Walk the Moons for a show or Group Loves for a show. It's great to build those relationships and to be able to be a part of their story without having officially have our hand on them with being the label.
Totally.
Well, can I just ask, how do you find artists? Like where does the taste making begin?
I would say Derek and I are obsessive. Okay. Like, I mean, just like completely
obsessive,
crazy people.
Just like going to see shows all the time.
I guess,
and
you know, at the beginning it was going to see shows, but it was also like, you know, being obsessed with MySpace and Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Going to shows, and friends always sharing music with us. Yeah. And honestly, just like living and breathing the blog life. I mean,
let's take it to like when Neon Gold was birthed around like 2007, 8.
So we birthed Neon Gold. So weird, so gross. In the summer of 2008, and I was at, we'd sort of just started discussing it. I was at the end of my sophomore year in college.
At Vassar.
And to that point, Derek and I had both done a bunch of different internships in a million different places. Derek, namely, is like a scout for like Excel and a bunch of lawyers and for Vice and similarly.
Just like a dope job for like a sophomore in college.
Totally.
There's a lot about the story that I'm just like, okay, that's cool, but like, how the fuck did you like get there? You
but know? He it's crushed it like- because he had so Derek and I met. I'm jumping around so much. Derek and I met when we were 14, 15 on Martha's Vineyard. I'm born and raised in London. He's weirdly enough born in London but grew up in DC.
Okay.
We became fast friends. We were both campers at a day camp and eventually became counselors when we really met.
And on the vineyard?
On the vineyard, on Martha's Vineyard. Which is, so that's like my U.S. home, weirdly, from London to NV. And we were just both obsessed with music. It was the thing we instantly clicked over. And mm-hmm. I was showing him a ton of bands that I was obsessed with from the UK. And he was showing me music he loved from the States. And that was like the foundation of our friendship and relationship.
Yeah. Where were you getting the music from? Because it was CD time. And
yes.
Like, before MySpace, when you were 14.
That like, was, so like- yeah. So that was really, again, blogs.
Blogs
and going to show, yeah. I like it was early days of blogs, okay. But I'm wondering, like, I'm in high school, I'm downloading things on Napster and LimeWire. I'm going to as many shows as I possibly can.
And so it's not from your parents.
It's like not from my parents. I mean, my dad has amazing music taste, and my older brother, absolutely, I think was like an enormous part of how I first got introduced to like a lot of music. Like I remember stealing Miseducation of Lauryn Hill from him at a very young age, and that like.
That album comes
huge
up a lot on the show. Yeah.
Oh my, that just, and stealing your brother's records. I mean, he had a huge case. I just remember taking them all the time.
Yeah.
So I was always into music and they always loved music too. But yeah, downloading and going to shows and going to like, there was a Tower Records on mm-hmm. Kensington High Street, which I lived off of. And I'd go all the time and I'd listen to their picks. And I'd also go to Rough Trade in Notting Hill. And they had like really, 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 really indie records that I wouldn't hear anywhere else. And I like, loved the process of discovering records and uh-huh. talking to the shopkeepers, like, you know, about what they were listening to. And
right.
there was such,
that's
like,
the best
such
source.
An actual, yeah. like, living music culture where there was a real back and forth about what you liked and what you didn't like.
Which is totally gone now.
Coming back, though, it's especially through but
record
stores.
Maybe. Not
I mean, the record store
not
thing.
But not that. I mean, I guess there are online forums in right. terms of, like, Reddit and things like that. But not where, like,
yeah.
you
but
really hook to a stranger.
The people that ran those stores, like, they knew totally. More than anybody.
Totally.
Yeah. yeah.
Totally, because they lived and breathed it. And
yes.
they were also
that's all that there was.
Terrified
it was a passion
and judgmental.
Thing, not just a business
yeah.
thing.
Totally.
Right. Yeah.
I also remember, I was in high school. My older brother's 2 years older than me, and he was at college. And Pitchfork was just starting out.
Uh-huh.
I remember him coming home from college and being like, you're going to absolutely love this, and introducing me to Pitchfork.
Yeah.
And I was probably a sophomore or junior in high school. Mm-hmm. And truly, like, it was the first I had ever heard of so many of these bands and mm-hmm. honestly heard a certain kind of music, especially electronic music. You know, I always really mm-hmm. liked rock and punk and alternative right. and pop and soul and funk, everything.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know that much about, like, really experimental electronic music
yeah.
like Wakes Up or Fortet or Boards of Canada mm-hmm. or even like I remember when the Go Team like Thunder Lightning Strike came out and I was like, oh my god, that level of like sampling music from all over and, uh-huh. and putting it all together to create an entirely new sound, it totally blew my mind.
But you weren't
it made
playing
me so
music
excited.
Then were you?
I wasn't playing music. I was
okay.
just
super fan.
A super fan yeah. like yeah. obsessive listener.
Yeah.
And again, like I remember, yeah, falling in love with that Go Team record, going to see them, and this Norwegian psych folk rock band was playing. Dunjan was opening for the Go Team. Such a weird pairing. That, like, would never happen now.
And this was in London.
And this was in London.
Yeah.
I remember seeing them in Brixton together. And it was just self-perpetuating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, one band just led you to another band, led you to another community. And I was creating all these relationships with record stores. And at the same time, Derek and I were building sort of, like, a language uh-huh. of our music and the things we loved, and he was listening to a lot of, you know, pop punk and emo that was sort of around in England but wasn't totally my taste mm-hmm. and that was really fun to like hear and see from his perspective mm-hmm. I remember Postal Service came out like
yeah.
the year we met, and that was like a huge record for us
yeah.
and we were just obsessive. I mean, honestly, it was just
right.
our entire life. Any downtime I had, I was listening for music, I was searching for music, I wanted to talk about music
uh-huh.
And he was my main outlet to share it with.
Okay.
And we talk a lot about Block Party, Sound Alarm, being mm-hmm. the record that really bonded us. That's
okay.
It's probably one of my top three, if not my number one record of all time.
Oh.
And I remember running to the store to get... I remember first hearing it, Zane Lowe premiered it on XFM 2.
Oh.
Derek and I falling in love with all the singles that we had heard. the record coming out. It wasn't out in the States. It was out in the UK first. I ran to Tower Records. I bought it. I came home. I uploaded it. I sent it to Derek, and we listened to it over the phone.
Oh, man.
Like, that's the so whole record cute. Start to front and, like, talked about it.
It's a and, wonderful romance.
Oh, I know. I just, like,
when Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
And just, you know, that record, that songwriting, it, like, felt like it was, you know, when you're that age, it just feels like music touches you in a way that, like, nothing does. Like, it understands you and it soundtracks your life. Mm-hmm. And
well, that definitely hasn't been lost for you. No, I mean, that's like only grown and grown
totally,
for you.
Totally. And but with a record like that too, like Paul Epworth produced it, and Paul Epworth at that time, you know, he was doing remixes as an artist called Phones, and Derek and I were obsessed. And that's the first time we started talking about production. And just everything stems from those beginning conversations, I think, between Derek and I about music.
Right.
So then fast forward later.
Yes.
He's running a blog called Good Weather for Airstrikes. Okay. He's interning at a bunch of different places. I'm feeding him music for Good Weather for Airstrikes, but I'm by no means a writer. I'm also interning at places. I'm booking shows at school. I've got a radio show at school. I'm working for promotion companies and venues and
hustling
labels in the summer. Yeah, because I assumed that to work in the industry, I assumed it was like a finance job where you have to work your way up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Which it was.
Which it was.
It was.
Totally. So it wasn't until
in theory,
I was like, you know, I was like, I'm gonna hustle. I'm gonna work in all these different places.
Yeah,
hopefully work my way up to a major position, label or whatever.
Exactly, like fingers crossed, get hired so that I can work in the music industry full time when I graduate.
Mm-hmm. Dream.
That's
what,
the dream.
In what
that
capacity
was pretty much it.
Were you imagining?
I mean, the pipe dream for Derek and me was to have a label.
Okay.
We're like, if we could do anything, it would be to find music and share it with the world. That's what we're best at. That's what gets us off the most.
Yep.
That's what we live to do.
Do you pinch yourself when you're like, yes, that's...
And oh, no. If I could go back to 15-year-old me and shake me and be like, it's happening. And then also tell them all the curveballs that
stuff?
My life is taking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even believe it. I'd be like, you're just kidding. That's
oh,
all.
God. So you're doing all that and he's doing that.
Yes. That's all happening. We're both, still sharing music. A friend of ours, Fran, who at one point worked for Neon Gold, took Derek to a show at Boston College. Girl Talk was playing. This is like so of the time.
Awesome. Yeah. Wait, so what year is this?
So this is 2007 or 2008.
Yeah.
And he goes and he sees this band open. The band that opens is Passion Pit.
Fuck. What were they up to at the time?
They were still in college. They were at Berkeley. So Berkeley kids playing like a local show, essentially. And I get a missed call from Derek. I get a voicemail, and he's like, oh, my God, I just seen the most amazing band, and they've got this song. And he's like, I've never felt this way. I'm so excited. Like, you have to listen to this song. I'm, like, really, really freaking out. Fast forward, it's like, I just remember there was a 24-hour period where we were constantly trying to get in touch with each other, and we kept missing each other. It was like emailing. Derek and me. Like, he's calling me, but I'm missing the call. I'm calling him back. I'm leaving a voicemail, like, leaving a message on AIM, like, sending an email, sending a text. I'm like, we can't catch up. He eventually sends me the song. I hear the song. I freak out. I have the same reaction. It's Sleepyhead.
Amazing.
I'm losing my mind. I'm like, oh my God, I've got such an epic song. I'm like, I'm losing my mind.
Yeah.
We finally get on the phone together and we're both like, oh my God, we're never going to find a band this good unsigned. Like, we have to do it now. Like, whatever we're doing, like, we just have to find a way to do this.
Yeah.
And that was the first
conversation.
Yeah, what is that?
So then,
like, if we had found it, we'd be like, amazing, cool. Right. Like, what is this? Where did you even begin? Well, I guess you were working in it, but okay.
So the next pieces. The next pieces are essentially, we head into the summer. Derek is in London that summer. I'm not sure where he is. I'm in New York. I'm working as an intern for Vice Records and Domino Records and AAM, which is like a college promotion company. And what happened? Basically, we spent that summer setting up all the legal stuff, like the boring behind-the-scenes stuff, and putting in like the small amount of savings that we had saved up, and talking about like doing vinyl and what we wanted Neon Gold to represent, which was essentially our taste. And our taste was that we came from different perspectives, but where we aligned was like this sweet spot that if we both liked something, that it was for everyone.
Yeah.
And we liked music that was too quirky and alternative for top 40 at the time. And pop was a dirty
word.
It just wasn't cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't cool to like pop.
Mm-hmm.
But we liked things, too quirky for that side. but honestly, too pop and accessible for Pitchfork.
Right.
Yeah.
There was just this real gaping hole where, like, there wasn't a place for artists with really accessible sounds. And we were like, well, pop shouldn't be a dirty word. There's really interesting, unique pop being made. This should be the kind of pop that's and redefining that genre on
which
a mainstream
is the indie,
scale.
Where the indie
which
word
is where the indie
helps.
Word comes in.
Right. Yeah.
Which is sort of, yes, a foundation. That sort of changed over time as the bands we've discovered have come to sort of redefine that landscape, especially at radio.
Right.
And that's awesome. But you're right. That is a little different where now
pop is
different. Pop is cool.
Yeah.
In a way that it wasn't.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Was also at that time the idea of singles being like it being driven by singles as opposed to LPs or even EPs.
That was pretty weird. No. I'd say that generally at that time people were still really held tight to an EP or an album model. We only did vinyl singles because Derek is a huge Anglophile and I grew up collecting 7 inches and being obsessed. With that model, which is a very English model, like HMV, you'd have like singles clubs.
Okay.
And there were UK labels at the time. There was Young and Lost and there's Chess Club, which is still a label now. And they were UK vinyl singles labels. And we became friends with those guys and we really just picked their brands apart and were like, how did you do this?
Right.
And completely built Neon Gold off their blueprint.
Wow. Yeah.
And there wasn't really anything like that in New York. So it felt like a really cool way for us to sort of
make your own.
Make our own and sort of, you know, nodded to sort of our English roots and the kind of bands we were interested in anyway.
Yeah.
And honestly, Derek and I were still in college.
Right.
So doing singles, when you're talking about doing...
What more could you really do?
A release of, you know...
So it was less 500, strategic.
Yes. 500 to 1,000 pressings of a 7-inch vinyl. That was an easy way for us to be like, this is like this sort is of simple. A handshake, one-time deal. We can do this as far as we can. And then when that's done, we can move on to the next single. Mm-hmm. It was a manageable way of us building a public resume and relationship with bands.
Yeah.
And financially, while still being in school.
Right.
So, and learning the business because we also were really flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah.
I mean, you can intern wherever you want and you learn something, but you don't know till you're in it.
Of course. No. Now, when you say you put your savings in, does that mean also your families were helping you?
Yeah. I'm thinking about
kids,
like, about what we started with. Like, we're literally putting, I think we started with $10,000.
Okay.
I genuinely can't remember if we both put in $5,000 or we both put in $10,000. And I think you're right. That probably was a combination of savings that we had had
from being camp counselors. Yeah. So that's
and
whatever not
birthday
add up to 10
money,
grand.
Which probably wasn't a lot, and our parents helping us out for sure.
Yeah.
Was Passion Pit at the time like cool, like a vinyl single?
Well, right. Like this is like this the craziest part of the story. So. Okay, so we spent the summer, like, doing all the paperwork. I literally remember being in the Domino offices and, like, sitting up, like, you know, LLC stuff and talking to Pat Riley and Greg Walker and Morgan Liebes, all of which are, like, still at Domino. And then being so sweet and really holding my hand through a lot of questions I had about the industry at that time.
Uh-huh.
This is just a side note, but I loved working at Domino. That was a really special summer for me. And Derek's brother-in-law is Sid, who's the bassist in La Salve Fav, and also runs French Kiss Records. And Derek and I went to Sid and played him Passion Pit. And we're like, are you interested? Do you like it? Sid got really excited and decided that he wanted to sign them to do an EP. And we basically asked, instead of a finder's fee, would he let us put out their first single as a way to sort of get going?
Yeah.
Which... He was fine with, which was amazing because that's obviously a huge coup for us.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you know, we had to ask the band if they were okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the band were, I think they were just really happy to be found.
Yeah.
I think they were really happy to have people who really, really cared about it. And Derek and I were obviously like so uncool, enthusiastic about it. And I think they were appreciative that we put them in a position where they were getting a deal out of it. I think from their perspective, it's like, sure, kids, like, do a 7-inch, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a lot to us. It's basically something that we can take on the road.
Right, now it's
there's nothing
of,
to lose.
Right,
really.
And now it's kind of, like, commonplace, but then it was probably, like, even super, like, kind of weird, but kind of just like, this is really cool. Like, no one was doing vinyl.
I think they felt it was like, I mean, I can't really speak for Michael, but I think from their perspective, it was probably like, yeah, having a merch item to have on tour and a good way to have their music officially released. They got a deal out of it.
So were they on a label at that point?
So at that point, they signed a French Kiss and then Columbia got really interested in Passion Pit and French Kiss and Columbia ended up doing a deal with them that we weren't a part of. Like, again, like we were, you know, we were just a jumping off point.
Right. But yeah, you didn't get swallowed up from that situation.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
No. Well, again, still college kids. I think everyone's like, what are you doing? Like, you have this blog. We haven't started Pop Shop at that point. Like, this was the first thing. Yeah. So no one even really knew, like, what we were, who we were. And for us, we were just excited.
In college were you?
So we started it the summer going into junior year.
Okay.
Because I remember that's when I started living with Vinyl. And because I literally...
What do you mean? In your dorm?
In my dorm. Like, I lived with it.
Boxes,
no.
Stacks. Sleeping on stacks.
Sleeping, like, in between mailers. I mean, and thank God I had that AAM job where, like, I was just, like,
oh my God,
stuffing mailers all summer. Yeah. And I got real good about doing that in, like, record time. I feel so amazing about that. So I lived with all the packaging. I lived with all the vinyl. And I would send out all the shipments myself. So I would get up early, and I'd fill out all the mailing, and I'd bring it to, you know, like, the mail desk at campus in the bottom of my dorm, got real friendly with everyone who worked at, like, the postal service, and they'd ship out, and I'd have to do it in the morning because I'd have so many packages that people didn't want to wait behind me.
What kind of student were you at this time?
Good question. No. I feel really good that I did well in school. I was always someone who, like, worked really hard in school, but never... I worked hard. I didn't always feel that my grades reflected as hard as I worked.
Okay, fair. That's fair. What was your major?
My major, I was a media studies major,
okay,
which sounds like a communications major, but Vassar Liberal Arts College, it's like being a philosophy major. That's really what it was. And I loved it.
It was the philosophy of media.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to Aristotle.
Marshall McLuhan.
Yeah, right.
The
exactly.
medium is the message. I didn't like high school learning. That felt like just rotary, like, memorization. I hated it.
Yeah.
I loved college.
Yeah,
I loved Vassar. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I felt like I really had an opportunity to have an opinion about things. I was reading intellectual and philosophical pieces that genuinely blew my mind wide open. It was a much more manageable, like, lifestyle and course schedule. You get to study what you're actually interested in.
Right.
I was able to work at the radio station and book shows. There was such a culture of music at that school. I was so close to New York. Like, it was just the right perfect storm for me.
Yeah.
So for me to be doing Neon Gold in addition to doing that, it just made sense. It wasn't a huge drain on my time. I was just excited to be doing it all.
Right.
And my professors were honestly really cool about it.
Like, so they knew.
They knew. They knew that I was doing it, and I was taking a few different, I was doing, like, musical urbanism. And my focus in my study of media studies was in music.
Okay.
So I think everyone saw it, like, aligning. And I remember having to take my junior year finals, spring finals. It's the Great Escape in May, which is essentially the South by Southwest CMJ of the UK. It happens in Brighton. And we were having a showcase, and I needed to fly over for it. And it was during my finals, and I had talked to all my teachers, and they were like, yeah, you can go, but you're going to have to take your finals from Brighton. I was like, okay, well, this is really That's cool nice. That you're being super accommodating about this.
Yeah.
And I remember taking my U.S. history final. Like, I had been up all night. Like, we'd had the show. I'd been partying all night. I probably got 2 hours sleep. I had to get up at 7 to, like, do, like, the essay, like, final, like, online at the same time everyone else is doing it. And sending it in and just being so shattered. And I was like, I can't believe I'm fucking doing this. I got an A on that final. I got an A. Might have been an A minus, actually, now that I'm saying
that's
it.
That's an A.
Still.
That's very respectable.
I tell that story to my parents a lot, being like, it's like, I got it done. Without... I made it work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's your good multitasker.
I'm a good multitasker. Yeah. I'm better at multitasking than having too much time.
Yeah.
I've always been like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I would imagine you're constantly just, as we were talking about before the podcast, the lists, the constant doing things.
Right. Constant lists.
Yeah. Did you, we had Verite on the podcast recently.
Oh.
It's wonderful.
I love Kelsey so much. I played a show at Babies on Tuesday, and she was there. And I've interviewed Kelsey for the Vivo show, and she works with and dates Zach, who's the drummer in Miss Mister, and Zach produced on the last Miss Mister record. So we're a real tight-knit group.
Yeah.
And I just, like, don't have enough good things to say about Kelsey.
Yeah. She's amazing.
And which is an interesting thing because I'm curious, you know, she is a true independent artist in a way that the word, and which is why this word gets a little murky for me.
For sure.
And why.
The word independent?
The word independent because she could clearly, I'm sure, like, be on Neon Gold if she wanted to. shouldn't put that in your mouth, but I assume from what you just said.
And still be considered indie?
No, my question is, what is it that she's would get from the, that the label would constrict her or take from her that she wouldn't want? Like, I mean, this is sort of transferring over to like, okay, other label philosophy. Yeah. What does it mean now, and how do you feel about that?
I'd say it's definitely shifted a
lot. It's definitely shifted. Yeah.
And it's a conversation I have with myself a lot as an artist, and then also obviously like coming to terms with what I'm doing then as running a label.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is, so it's a really conflicting conversation.
So fascinating.
Even, like, think to myself about.
Yeah. I wanted to get to that, but the reason I brought up Verité was actually because she talked about writing her goals down and it being like sort of the secret situation where it's like, I want to play Music Hall of Williamsburg. That is a goal that I have, and somehow putting it out in that way.
I totally believe that.
Were you? Yeah.
Have you watched, this is a little bit of an offshoot, but have you watched that Jim and Andy documentary? It's so good on Netflix.
Amazing.
I can't recommend it enough.
You have to watch it.
But okay. Jim Carrey sort of talks about like manifesting his success.
Uh-huh.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I definitely believe in that, like, if you put 110% of yourself into something, it's going to happen. Uh-huh. I believe in that. And like Kelsey said about writing stuff down, I totally believe that. You have to be clear with yourself and with others about what you want in order to achieve those goals. Mm-hmm. You can't just have like sort of ambiguous ideologies about what you want to achieve. You have to create sort of these stones in the water, ideas of what you want, because otherwise you don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
And Derek and I, it's funny, we actually just recently had that conversation for the label too, because in an industry where the face of it is so shape-shifting, we have to think about what our role is as a label and what our goals are for ourselves and our artists. And
yeah,
totally.
Let's go there.
I think in any industry, whatever you're doing, that's a conversation you should have with yourself. Yeah. What are your goals? And like actionable, concrete goals,
right,
as well as the big
dreams. The lofty ones.
And that's okay. Yeah. I think you should have the two always.
Yeah.
Well, I think also that feeling of accomplishing the smaller goals gives you motivation to keep going.
Totally.
You know, you need to give yourself an opportunity to be like, cross that off the list.
100%.
I achieved something, 100%. Even if it's small.
And that goes back to our to-do list.
Yeah. Right.
Where you're like, it goes back to your to-do list of like, okay, put on like taking a shower, taking out the trash.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
Because
you cross
the more things
you feel great.
You feel good. And then it feels like you're getting momentum.
Right.
And you're just building off of that. If I feel like I've done 10 things, just personal actions, before I even have to get to my first emails of the day or a meeting, I already feel like I'm on a roll. That feels good.
Yeah.
Even if I'm falsely giving myself
this is my argument for being a morning person and giving yourself time before you go into work in the morning.
So I so desperately want to be on your page.
I'm trying.
Oh, me too.
It feels brutal. Great when it happens.
It feels so good when it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking to two musicians. It's the wrong audience
just a night
for
owl.
Morning person.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That's a problem.
My mom is a morning person, and so just, there's so much judgment around
dreamy.
It.
Yeah.
It's the way, guys.
It seems dreamy.
It really does.
Do you crash early?
Yeah.
Are you exhausted?
I have to.
That's the difference.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Yeah.
But I also wonder, like,
I was dying to go to your show. I couldn't go to an 11 o'clock
I know.
Show.
This is
and
where we're at now.
You know, I want to be like, with you. We went on late, you know, because all the bands went on late.
Killed me.
Changeover to go out. I didn't go on stage till 11:20.
Yeah.
That's a late show on
Which
a Tuesday night.
It's a late
for
show
anyone.
Now
I appreciate
though.
That.
I don't know because it
Friday
didn't
I
would have
showed up. Tuesday.
But Tuesday, that's a big ask.
Right.
I feel you. I hear you. I understand.
Yeah. I wanted to. I actually.
Yeah.
There's a couple things, but I just wanted to ask about, like, are you the rock and roll lifestyle? Like, are you like off the bus or back onto the bus, you know, have some tea, go to sleep, or are you a party? Do you live that
party
kind of
animal
lifestyle?
I feel like I've toured all the ways.
Yeah.
Like, where, there have been, I tried it all out. Yeah. You know? Like, I remember the first tours, you know, I wasn't a singer before. Yeah. This Mr.
This could be a little crazier.
So
right?
No, the opposite. Like, oh. I didn't have the stamina to do shows back to back. I would do one show and I'd basically lose my voice. Mm. So I was so nervous about being able to do shows that I was a Girl Scout. I feel like the first year that Miss Mister was touring, I was so good. And like, yeah, went, like, got as much sleep as I could, drank as much water as I could, did vocal warmers. I took pristine care of myself.
Right.
And I was honestly, by the end of it, I was miserable. I was like, this isn't who I am. As a girl who was raging in college and at pop shops and getting blackout in my early 20s in New York, I was like, no.
Right.
This is not the life I signed up for. I take this seriously, but I can't be this person that I'm not. I'm still not being myself.
Right. And it's funny because so many musicians now, the sort of millennial crowd does sort of take that step back and not live that kind of like lifestyle of the artist that you were inspired by.
Totally.
And that lifestyle is part of
it.
It ends up becoming a balance.
Yes. You asked this question of a lot of people.
Which one?
About
the rock and roll
lifestyle. Okay. Well, I'm curious to know why.
Because
you
I was
asked this question.
Fascinated to learn in my own band and experience, you know, being around that we're like not partiers. Like that it's like it's not the scene to like drugs, sex, drugs, rock and roll. That's not what it is. It's like be a responsible, wellness conscious people who like take care of yourself and go to sleep and, you know, just it's just a different generation, I think, of things. And I don't know if you've read Meet Me in the Bathroom or are you in it?
Love it. I'm not. Derek gets a mention in it, which is really exciting. Okay. But obviously I'm obsessed. That's like my perfect dream moment and time. I'm sure you read Please Kill Me.
No, I haven't read Please Kill Me.
Oh my God, girl. You have got to leave this interview and get that book.
Okay.
Because that is like what Meet Me in the Bathroom is like, based off of this like oral punk history.
Totally.
You're going to feel so fulfilled and satisfied with that.
I know. It's like,
I'm
definitely
so excited for it. That is the greatest gift I can give you out
amazing
of this interview.
Okay. Fantastic. So that, I mean, that's
when
what
you
we're
read,
talking
about. Once you read it, you have to come back.
Okay. When you read it,
we'll have
a book club and we'll talk about Please Kill Me and Meet Me in the Bathroom. Yeah. Like,
okay.
I would love that.
Okay. But that's what I'm talking about is that is a lifestyle that I feel like it's hard to maintain as an artist.
Yes.
But they did, and I feel like fewer do. Am I just like in my own bubble of experience, or do you find that I'm speaking some kind of truth?
I think you're speaking some kind of truth. I eventually did
some kind of truth.
I eventually found a middle ground where them tours where I got too fucked up and I couldn't do what I really needed to, and I didn't like feeling like I wasn't taking what I was doing seriously with this opportunity. Yeah. And then I found this middle ground. And
I guess this is like with any job.
For sure.
You start a new job, you're so good, and then you test your limits. You're like, no, I can't really do my job if I do that. Yeah.
But I think the biggest difference is basically where we are in time. You know, if you think about bands like touring 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, there just wasn't as much constant pressure around you to do as many things. Think about bands now where
You're social media all the time.
Yeah. You're press all the time. It's much quicker to get to places. So bands where they have like, they'd have to take a day to travel between shows or whatnot.
Yeah.
Just everything is consolidated. Mm-hmm. So I think an artist is being asked to do a lot more once than they
That's
ever were.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be on all the time.
Right.
So you don't have as much like privacy or downtime to get as fucking wiki wild as you want.
Right, you have to be the business person in the morning.
When you sort of got to be like face all the time.
Face all the time, answer emails, if you're not on a label, you're doing it all yourself.
Totally. Mm-hmm. So like you're constantly on email, you're constantly on social media, you're doing press, you've got a show. Like, there just isn't, I feel bad for people, well, for a lot of artists now where they don't have that downtime to go crazy. I think certain people like still do it. I look at someone like Tove Lo and Charlie and like, those girls rage.
Nice.
I mean, they are living their best life on the road.
And there's something about
totally, it's exciting.
Someone else was saying that about them on the podcast. I forget who it was. Anyway, it must be true.
But I think like there's an element of not losing yourself.
Oh, I think
yourself,
I was asking Phoebe Ryan. I was like, are you a party girl?
Phoebe loves weed. I mean, like Phoebe's one of the best stoners I know. Like she lives her best life.
But I feel like she called out Charlie about this. Yeah.
Weed is a little different, but maybe not. I don't know.
But it's still happening. It's still out there.
There's some romanticism about a bygone time almost.
Yes.
You're saying weed is different. Like you can smoke a lot of weed and still kind of be good.
Kind
of. Yeah.
Well, I would say that the people I look to who I'm like, you're still raging and it's goddamn inspiring. Yeah. Charlie and Tove.
Right.
And also, Cage the Elephant guys go so hard.
Yeah.
And the Portugal the Man guys go so okay. hard. Like,
is there
those
a difference?
Guys are really, really, really doing it.
Okay.
It's inspiring.
Is there a difference that we're talking a little bit about rock versus pop?
Well,
in this way?
I'd say no, only because Charlie and Tove go just as hard
True.
As those
okay.
guys. Yeah. And they're two different genres. Yeah.
Right.
And
no.
electronic artists, DJs, I mean, like,
okay, totally.
They can be hungover and
right, right, right.
And hip-hop artists are blazed out of their mind. Oh my
right.
God, I could never smoke and go on stage. That
oh my
seems
God.
Like an absolute
no
nightmare.
Way. No way.
It's a real panic attack. And if I took drugs, if I took E or something and performed, I would literally just be making out with the entire
Oh my God, I can't even imagine.
It would just, like, I'm already so like, love. I would be, like, dripping with attention for every single person in the audience. I'd have proposed to everyone in the audience by the end of the show.
Right. Right.
So I think your fantasy is still being fulfilled.
Great.
You look unsatisfied. You
know, no,
so
no, no.
But just, think about, yeah, what these artists are being asked of.
No, I think that's exactly to my point that I was going to ask you also is just, like, what is the difference of these idols that were only, like, 8-10 years ago coming up and changing the scene? And also, the music scene that is in that book, Meet Me in the Bathroom, it starts off in, like, 2001. There's sort of a wasteland, mm-hmm. and there's, like, nothing really happening in rock and roll, basically.
Oh, my God. I am holding on to that so tight.
So I'm
That's
wondering.
That's inspiring to me as someone
I know,
who's in New York
who's now
trying to
do you feel
do
like
it.
You're transitioning a little bit from pop to rock?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you feel like there will be a, obviously, pendulum swing all the time. That's inevitable.
I
but,
really
like,
hope.
Do you see that? Are you excited for that? Is that, like.
My feelings about it are. They are this. Is that, that there isn't, for me on a personal level, there is a natural progression where we had done two albums with Miss Mister. I'd only ever made music with Max. So proud of what we achieved, but having never written music before, either of us,
mm-hmm.
Miss Mister was created with them, you know, under the limitations of what we were capable of.
Sure.
And that led us to a pop space,
mm-hmm.
given that neither one of us played instruments and the references that we were making and our influences.
Just yeah. like amazing to even think about.
Totally.
You like
had so that's this... its own special. That's its own special story.
Totally.
But coming at the end of that two album cycle, I hit this point where I was like, how am I going to move forward and grow as an artist? I want to get in the room and write with other people for the first time. I want to hold my own hand over the fire. I'd been in partnerships my whole life to that point, mm-hmm. whether it was with Derek with Neon Gold,
mm-hmm.
Max and Miss Mister. I was coming out of a 5-year relationship. Mm-hmm. It just felt like the first time in my life where I was like, wow, I just really want to do something on my own and not compromise and have an autonomous vision and
yeah.
just see what I'm capable of, having
yeah.
learned everything I've learned from Neon Gold and Miss Mister, and do something that really honors the music that I really grew up listening to,
uh-huh.
which is... really so
rock.
Much what which is rock and indie
yeah,
and
yeah.
punk, and that's so much that time period of Meet Me in the Bathroom,
right.
you know, when I talk about, you know, Yeah Yeah Yeahs and La Tigre
right.
and TV on the Radio and Block Party and Interpol
Strokes.
Mm-hmm. And The Strokes, like, that was such a golden era and age for me. It had a huge influence on me,
yeah.
and then even before
yeah.
that, someone like PJ Harvey and Fiona Apple,
right,
Susie Sue and the Banshees, Shirley Manson, like, I've
uh-huh.
just always had this super, super sweet spot for just
yeah
rock music.
Right.
And
yeah.
alternative music. And that if you see me on stage, even with Miss Mister, I've always been that character on stage. The music didn't necessarily match who I was at that point.
Okay.
So that was my task to myself heading into LPX, was I need to do something that feels more in line with wholly myself on my own terms
mm-hmm.
for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a natural progression that brought me to that
Amen.
Place.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So good.
But also I would say yes. There's now that pop music is not a dirty word, I love pop music. I've got so much love. I mean, I think I've proven that. My life has really been a love letter
yeah.
to pop music.
Yeah.
But I feel like because there's a certain circuit of writing now and people in the mix, everything is really sounding very samey to me. I feel like
mm-hmm.
there's everything sounds like, you know, electronic, but still has those R&B influences, and everyone's going to the same writers and the same producers, and I just honestly really, 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 really miss these wild, bold, alternative women. I just don't feel like that people have, like the Alanis Morissette or the
mm-hmm.
Sheryl Crow or the Gwen Stefani
right.
or the Shirley Manson
yeah.
that I grew up with. And I see such a lane. And I feel like LPX is all the best bits about pop that I love.
Totally.
But it's still so true to my roots in punk rock and indie.
If you don't see the thing you want in the world, you got to be it
totally.
Sometimes.
That's
yeah.
exactly
yes.
how I feel about it. So that's I take that really seriously.
It's brilliant.
Hard because, you know, it's hard also when you're creating music that I'm hearing top down from labels. Don't sign alternative. No one's interested in alternative.
Don't sign alternative to your label?
Not to us, but I hear it within other companies telling their A&Rs. Like, people don't know what to do with alternative music.
Which is rock, which is what LPX would be considered alternative.
It's like the least streamed and understood genre on all the services. Everyone's only really interested in pop, electronic, and hip hop. Which is totally fine. Like you said, there's a real pendulum swing, but it sucks at a time when I actually genuinely feel like there's a sort of amazing renaissance of alternative happening. You know, I think about someone like Mitski or St. Vincent or Bully or Big Thief. I mean, this groundswell of really exciting things happening in alternative, and there just isn't a lane.
I wanted to ask you about St. Vincent.
Yes.
I just saw the concert, her concert at King's Theater.
I haven't seen
it.
I'm really curious to see it because as someone who's like, you know, I feel like an art rock band in my own right. I feel like she's claiming that line.
Okay, art rock band. Is that what you just said?
She's art rock.
Right? Art rock.
Yeah,
No. I just hadn't heard that.
But does that help you
understand the show that you saw? Because I have very conflicting
feelings about it.
I have a lot of emotions about it.
I want to hear all your emotions about it because I haven't seen it, but
You've heard. I hear
both sides, so I want to hear your side.
Okay, I'm one that would do this in general. I will play both sides because I don't
I'm not going to be like,
I feel this one way. I have a lot of feelings. I've loved St. Vincent since her first record and like saw her play live and fell in love. Mm-hmm. And I've loved every record since, you know, varying degrees. But I think she's, and what excites me about her is that it is this lane of like rock, but there's such a unique sound and her playing is so inspiring and like watching her play with a band. Okay, so seeing her show where she stands on the stage alone and then, you know, has these like very colorful, very like poppy videos behind her, this sort of like weird performance art. I felt like I was at an art show listening to her album. I didn't feel like I was at a concert. And if I put it in those terms and I say this is an art rock show, cool. I'm like all in on that. Like I appreciate that that exists in the world. I appreciate she's someone who's pushing things forward and who is doing something different. All in on that. It's not what I want as a fan. As a fan of St. Vincent's music, I want to go and see her kill it on guitar with a band. I want to see a drummer play. I want to see her backing band. I like want that experience. And I felt like an old head. Like I felt like, man, I'm like lame. I'm old. Like I can't get down with just like these tracks. But it bummed me out. But I'm like, but at the same time, I'm a fan of yours as an artist. If this is your choice right now as an artist, I'm in. I get it and I'm cool with it. But it's not what I as a music fan was excited for.
I hear you. And I feel like that's generally been what I've heard from huge fans of hers, and I'm also a fan. I think about St. Vincent as her own artisan lane, as every artist wants to be, and especially with her, you know, it's St. Vincent before David Byrne, and it's St. Vincent after David Byrne. And
yeah,
you just have to like
true.
Acknowledge and contextualize that she was a different artist before and after him.
Okay.
And I think she sees her role as an artist now sort of like regardless of genre, and I have to respect that. Obviously, in my mind and heart, like I consider her a role model and a bastion of alternative rock and female force, especially in that lane.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and I don't know Annie Clark, but I have to imagine from her perspective, she sees herself as essentially like a modern age Kate Bush or Bjork.
Yeah.
And those are kinds of artists who revolutionized
absolutely
concerts. And I also respect that, you know, shows are, I feel like this, her art show, her concert is a reflection on like the repetitive nature of a concert, which it does, you do end up becoming robotic.
So you mean that's a commentary on it in a way?
I think in some way, and again, hard for me to comment without having seen the show.
No, but you know what you're
But I think that there's an element of touring where you start to feel robotic and it feels like so constructed. And yes, it feels raw and fun for the audience for the first time.
Right, that's where it gets like kind of the Warholian, like kind of like just showing us like, right, and that's where the videos came in and you're like, so it does, it's thought-provoking in that art way.
But I absolutely hear you at a time when alternative feels like it's not getting a lot of attention and love. Yeah. And for her to be at the level which she's at, to not be performing with a band,
to really
be leaning into this genre and territory that I feel is missing and I desire as a fan,
yeah,
it's hard to come to terms with.
So I totally hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I would want that too. I really want to see someone wild out on stage. I saw Spoon last week and I was like, God, it just feels great to see a rock show.
Live instruments.
And like, I can't wait to see like War on Drugs and The Horrors are my two favorite records of the year. I can't say, if you have not listened to The Horrors record, it's the most underrated record. I haven't seen it on nearly enough end of year lists.
Okay.
I am living. I want to see a rock band play.
Yeah.
Do you see LPX as alternative or rock or both?
So I see it, it's funny. I have this conversation with management all the time. It's really hard because I'm coming up against this wall where I see it as an alternative project. Okay. One of my goals is in a genre massively dominated by men.
Yeah.
I really want to be this loud, wild alternative voice and live neck and neck with stadium rock bands. Mm-hmm. You look at like the Spotify Rock This playlist and it's Queens of Stone Age and Foo Fighters and Muse and 1975 and Imagine Dragons and Cage the Elephant and 21 Pilots and it's all men.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a handful of women who I feel like are really breaking down those walls.
Can we think?
St.
Vincent's one of them. Kay Flay just got a Grammy nom. But Kay Flay is also genre defying.
She was on the show.
A rap artist and her production sort of leans more into alternative.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
I'd also, Bishop Briggs is also, I'm inspired by what she is. She is a modern alternative artist in that she is ticking certain pop tropes, intentionally or unintentionally, I don't know, but like to keep her within a certain lane. But she is still powerful and raw enough.
Mm-hmm.
It works in a rock space.
Mm-hmm.
But those are those are the three.
Right.
That's
a problem.
That's a problem.
On one hand.
And the problem that I'm facing is coming out of Miss Mr. World, which was in a pop lane, I think people don't yet know where to place me. And I think if you've only listened, why would you not have, the songs that are out, which are Tightrope, Tremble, Slide, and I do a feature with an electronic artist called What's or Not.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, like I said, it's all rooted in alternative rock. It's all live instruments, but it's pop melodies.
Yeah.
So I'm still being held to this pop standard, and it doesn't feel, I'm in this weird spot again where I'm too alternative for pop,
right.
But I'm too pop for rock. And it feels like this weird pendulum swing where I feel like I'm having the same conversation with myself that I had at the beginning of Neon Gold. Mm-hmm. Where like at that time, pop was the thing that hadn't really figured itself out. And I almost feel like cyclically, I'm coming back to where I started, but now the question is alternative.
And practically, what problem does it present for you to have to make that decision?
It's really hard for me to get Spotify playlisting. It's hard for people to, and that obviously has become such a huge, part of breaking any band, that for Spotify to question where I land limits the scope of the audiences that I should be targeting.
Yeah.
I've been really lucky. That's, like, I love Spotify.
So Spotify's a new radio.
Fundamental.
You're not worried about where to get on the radio. You're worried about where to get on radio.
Like, again, I'm self-funding, self-releasing. I'm doing this independently. Yeah. So radio is almost its own question because I don't have the funds to build a campaign around radio yet. I need to build a story and a following before I can even go down that path.
Yeah.
But between us and everyone who's listening, I feel confident about going to radio. Like, I feel really...
Your songs bang so hard.
Thank you.
Slide is a fucking banger.
I've been having it on repeat.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So I feel good about going to radio and being like, this is... alternative, you don't know who you are anymore. This is still like in line with the bands that you like, but it's modern and it's pop. It's still accessible.
Yeah.
So that's its own thing. But Spotify, is the new radio. And for an artist just starting out, you have to get the right listeners. You got to get to the right audience.
Uh-huh.
So my concern or my challenge with Spotify is that if I'm put in the wrong playlist, I'm not being listened to by the right ears. I need to get to the kind of fans that are going to understand it. There's an audience for it, but I have to find it. And that comes through the correct playlisting.
Right. And this is almost the work of Neon Gold, is this tastemaking and trendsetting that, like, it hasn't shifted. It's just bubbling. So it, like, hasn't happened yet that now everyone thinks that's the cool thing, you know?
And it's hard. You had more outlets before. Like, the blogosphere, it really comes down to Spotify. Blogs and press, like, that doesn't move the needle the way it once did.
Really?
And shows, I think... touring is the most important thing. I mean, it seems like you agree as well. Like, the artists that I see who have long-term careers grinded it out on the road and they made a relationship with an audience and they put in the time, whether you like the music or not, like, look at artists like Mumford & Sons or Group Love or Portugal the Man, who have just grinded it out on the road, tour after tour after tour. You cannot deny that they put on an amazing show. Whether they have singles at radio or not, they can tour and make money as a band and live their lives as artists and musicians. That's the goal.
Right.
I want to live, I don't want to live and die by a single. I'm not trying to get a certain like celebrity quick-witted status. Like, I want to make music for the rest of my life. So I want to play. Also, genuinely, if a band doesn't play a good live show, I don't care.
Right.
Yeah, like, totally. That's put up or shut up. You either represent or you don't. You can do it or you can't.
Right. Yeah. But an artist can, if especially if you're independent and not on a label, and tell me if I'm wrong, but like, you can make a lot of money from Spotify. And it, I mean, touring is, I think, still like number one, but.
So, yes, I would say, you know, this going back to coming off of Miss Mister and doing LPX and deciding to do it independently, I, with some level of arrogance, I was like, you know, coming off my experience with Neon Gold and Miss Mister, you know, I'm seeing all these hip hop artists release stuff independently and really create this new lane and prove that they can do things on their own. And and it's bigger risk, but they stand to make significantly more money that they can put back into the project. And if I'm doing the A&R and the marketing ideas and the visual, like, why would I be giving a piece of that to someone else? I can do this. And I have enough money saved up that I can invest into myself and set this up the way that I feel appropriate to do. And how amazing would it be if in the long run, like, my story was that I reclaimed alternative as a genre that didn't understand itself, became a woman and a force within that lane, and I did it on my own. Pretty much unheard of within a genre. There just aren't like independent artists who do that in pop or in rock. It just, I can taste it. I want it so
badly. That's going to happen.
So all of those things being said, there's so many things in my way to do that. And I'd say, like, you know, yes, Spotify, if things really go at Spotify, that's huge for me. That's money that I can put directly back into the project.
All
I want to do is tour.
Because that money goes directly to you.
Goes directly to me and my team.
Right.
If I was making money off Spotify, when I'm making money off Spotify,
there you go.
I'm just going to put it into touring. It right back. I've done two tours to date. I did a tour with Haim, which is amazing. That's a huge opportunity. Such an amazing cosign. They're friends of mine. That's exactly playing to the right audience. I also did a tour with RAC. I love being on the road. I feel so confident about my live show and who I am as a performer.
Yeah.
It's so expensive. It's so expensive.
Yeah.
And then when you don't have label support and that's coming out of your own pocket,
so that's real.
So now that's the difference. So now that I'm entering, you know, I'm putting out an EP in January and I wish I could just be on the road, but I can't afford to tour yet. I just can't. I can probably do two big tours, ideally opening for the right people next year to get in front of the right fan base.
Okay.
But like, that's a real
challenge. And that's, I guess, coming back to when you said that you and Derek are having conversations about the shift and what that means for Neon Gold and what that means in general. This is part of that. It's like, what is, you know, if it's really like tour support or I don't know what else that the label really gives you that you can't get on your own.
It's tough. It's tough, but the way that Derek and I talk about with Neon Gold is what we feel we offer, you know. I think the conversation of being on a label or not on a label definitely comes down to what genre you're in, what kind of artist you are, and what your interests are. You know, I've definitely worked with musicians who just live and breathe the music, but they don't really care about the visuals, which is totally okay. You know, or I live with artists who aren't really good at recording but really like playing live shows and don't know how to translate that or don't know how to do marketing, don't care about that side. That's totally okay. Sometimes musicians just want to be a musician. And what we offer is,
we'll take care of
we'll
you.
We'll help with marketing and campaigning. That's what we're really good at. Something we take a lot of pleasure in doing. And we'll be your ears.
Right.
Like, what we're best at doing is A&R and marketing. So if you're an artist looking for those things, looking for feedback and help getting off the ground and a completed vision, or, you know, we've worked with so many artists like Marina and Christina the Queens and Tovlo who have such a whole vision for themselves. We just want to be there to execute your vision because you have such a complete sense of self. So I do feel like we are in this special lane where we can offer bands those opportunities and offer tour support, which is huge.
That's
everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally understand why a hip hop artist would be like, why do I need you? I can just keep releasing mixtapes. I've got no overhead to tour.
Right.
and put that money back in the project.
Yeah.
So it's a confusing, ever-evolving conversation that has no clear answers and is different for everyone.
That's good. I feel like you've marked out your resolutions for 2018. Yes. You have your achievable goals, your lofty goals.
I really hope. Yeah.
I mean, you just nailed it with what you said. You know, what you're going for is exciting. Because I think a lot of people, I'm feeling ready for that. You know,
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad you brought up me in the bathroom, because there's also this huge shift. I'm sure you guys feel it too, where everyone is leaving New York. It's all happening in LA. And there's some really exciting things happening in California. And all these writers and producers and musicians and artists are out there. It's a really wonderful community, and a lot of exciting music is being made there. I go back and forth a lot. I got no beef with LA. I'm just a New Yorker.
Yeah.
I am the best version of myself in this city. I feel very tied to this city. I think I feel very nostalgic and connected to the bands that I fell in love with that are from this city. And so when I started Meet Me in the Bathroom, it opens and it basically talks about New York being this wasteland. No one's here. No one cares. There isn't a scene.
Right. And how at the same time there is something alive about it that is inspiring. And like,
well, then if you stay, you can become the pioneer of the next era.
So in my mind, that's what I'm holding on to. I'm
love it.
If it happened then, it can happen again. And why shouldn't it? And I think all the intentions are in the right place. And New York is always going to have that magic. And people are always going to say New York is dead or LA is dead.
Yeah, they've always said it, though.
You just got to do your thing.
Yeah.
Do what's right to you.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
But something
here
I appreciate about you is that you're claiming your lane, but you also try to open the lane, especially for other women artists to come with you. And
I hope so.
Thank you for that.
I mean, I don't think it's about out shouting one another, it's like more
this
hands
is
on
the
deck
message
the better.
I hear a lot of women saying now, which we all have to understand ourselves. There's room for all of us.
100%.
We've been taught that there isn't, that there's only room for one.
And those, it's definitely the gatekeepers. It's
right,
the gatekeepers
exactly.
at radio. It's gatekeepers at play. It's
which are falling away, but are they now moving to Spotify? are those gatekeepers just now?
Who knows?
Shifting platforms.
It's an opportunity to Spotify to not fall into those tropes. And I think they do a lot to overcompensate for that. Not overcompensate. I mean that in a positive way. But
you're a gatekeeper now, in a way. You have a label.
Yeah.
So that's also
true.
Part of it. Who
that's
are the
true.
Gatekeepers?
Who are the gatekeepers who are leaving? And I think also part of it is, you know, women, supporting women online and on tour and on features and in the way you talk and respect other artists in your lane. And also, honestly, for men to incorporate and bring more women and have more features. Like, it's not just like women supporting women, which is incredibly important. It's everyone supporting each other.
Exactly.
And I always point to my business partner and best friend, Derek, who is a man, bringing
an ally.
You know, us working together as a team and us walking away from situations where I wasn't recognized as an equal in a meeting, and us not signing with certain companies because of that, and him being a huge, huge, huge champion and loudspeaker for women. We predominantly release women on our label,
right?
And he pretty much, we've only really had maybe like 2-3 male people work with us over the past 10 years. Like, it's just about, again, all hands on deck, everyone treating each other as equals. Yeah, I'm really looking to those stadium rock acts and really, really big rock acts just embrace more women. I think they are. It's just, you know, breaking that mold and not feeling competitive.
Yeah.
You know, I remember seeing some radio competitions, even with Miss Mister, about who's the female alternative voice you want to hear on the radio. And it was Haley from Paramore, me, Hannah from Group Love, I'm sure a lot more other people I can't remember. But basically, things like that are so fraught, because it's basically saying that there's only room for one or two or three female voices within a certain genre.
Yeah, that's why the competition comes in.
And it doesn't make
sense
when you're looking at, you know, however many indie or rock bands, boys in leather jackets, you never have that conversation.
Right.
It just shouldn't be a part of it. And I said before, there are so, I don't know if you've listened to that Big Thief record. It is just stunning.
Okay.
I mean, it is just so amazing. There's a lot of really exciting stuff happening in alternative, especially with women. I think a lot of peer support. Muna also, breaking down the wall and being an amazing loudspeaker for social issues too, and politics. And obviously there's more space for that, and it's more important than ever to also be incorporating that.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah.
So
well,
I feel optimistic.
To you. Leading by example.
but I feel good. I feel like eyes on the prize.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So the EP is coming out
January 12th.
Woo! Awesome.
You can pre-order it now or order it now, whenever this comes out.
Are there any more singles coming out before that?
I'm probably going to put out... So Slide is out now.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those funny things.
Slide produced by a woman.
Slide produced by a woman. Jen DeSilvio, who's an awesome, awesome, awesome writer and producer. And she did the whole Beth Ditto record, nice. Which for me is like so exciting because I love the gossip.
Yeah.
And she does a lot with Anne Marie out of the UK. And she's a total boss. And that was, like I said before, like a really unique experience being in the room with a woman, which is not something I've done very much of, mm-hmm. which is not something that should be as rare as it is.
Exactly.
With the single conversation, yeah. you know, in my mind, like, there's a song on the title track from the EP. It's called Bolt in the Blue. I'm super proud of it. It's like a personal political mantra, Nine Inch Nails inspired anthem. It's
sweet.
It is heavy.
Yeah.
It is super aggressive.
Awesome.
and in my mind, like, that's going to be like the focus track.
Cool.
And so that's what I plan to direct people towards as it comes out. Okay. But in the age of Spotify, it's sort of like, well,
Vanessa,
it's going to put its own hand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of, you know.
Will they get put onto playlists? Like, someone curates that.
Someone creates that stuff.
So, yeah.
So,
it's exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited about putting out the EP. I think that really contextualizes the project for the first time in the way where I understand why people to this point still don't maybe quite know where to place me.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I think just even having three more songs.
Sure.
To put together the spectrum of what the project is offering
yeah.
is going to give people a greater understanding of like what I really want from this project.
Totally.
And I'm already, you know, I'm still writing. I plan to just keep writing and releasing and touring when I can afford to and where I can. And you just hope in time that like people catch up with you. You just have to sort of keep doing it.
Just
and
when keep I, doing the
even
work.
When I look at someone like Mitski, I'm like, girl, you just hustled. You just kept doing your mm-hmm. best work and mm-hmm. putting it out and people caught up.
Yeah,
and it's really awesome to see someone like her thriving. And it's yeah. exciting to see someone like Verité.
Yeah.
Just keep releasing music, keep establishing herself. Like
on her own.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she is the only pop artist I can point to that is doing that.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Well, cheers to the independent ladies. Yeah.
Cheers to the indie ladies and my soul sisters.
Yeah, exactly. thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Wow, we'll see you back here for book club.
Have me back whenever.
Okay.
New York ladies, we got to stick together. I'm
yes,
around.
That's right.
Awesome. I'm a real talker. We can go for days.
As you can see. All right, to be continued then.
Yes.
Thank you for
Thank
having
you.
Me.
Sweetest of the life cuts you like a knife.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.